I think I can just about start now. I'm up for the next talk. My name is Sonette Van Sail. I'm actually from Fresno State, and that's out there in California, for those of you who don't know, right in the middle of the Central Valley. So my talk is going to be on the effects of foliar potassium applications on table grape quality. So instead of talking about wine grapes today, I'm going to move it out to table grapes, which is your freshly consumed grapes. They are a little different because they have to look really nice for the consumer out there. It's not, you know, wine grapes that you actually crush, and you don't need to see the outside and berry quality. Okay, just a little bit of a background here. In 2011, the world total grape production was almost 70 million metric tons. Now, that's a lot of grapes. And of that total, about 22 million metric tons were table grapes. So if we look at table grapes, they also have a bit of a bigger berry than wine grapes. So we have a pretty big volume that is involved in terms of your world production here. Now, the United States, as a country, is the seventh largest grape producer in the world. If you go and you look on the California Table Grape Commission's website, you will see all the other countries involved. And it's been a few years now that United States were actually seventh in the world. So if you look at a map, this graph over here, China, on this end here, is by far the largest producer of table grapes. Now, we don't really see those table grapes here because most of the table grapes they produce is locally consumed in China. Okay, that's why, but they have a lot. It's a lot more than any other country. And then also Turkey and the EU also produces a lot of table grapes. And then it all the way goes down to Hong Kong, that is also on the list. So you can see where United States fall seventh. So California, as such, produces more than 98% of the U.S. Table grapes, and 85% of that is located in the southern San Joaquin Valley. Now, for those of you who's not really familiar with where that is, I've got a map here. It's not the best quality map. Fresno is pretty much in the middle of the state, in the middle of the middle, if you look north, south, east, and west. And that southern San Joaquin Valley area, anywhere here from Riverside, where you have Coachella Valley, where there's a lot of table grapes, up north to Bakersfield, Delano area, and also in Madera, there's some table grapes. But your most predominant area for it is in the Bakersfield and Coachella areas. There's also a lot of wine grapes and raisins in that area, so keep that in mind. All right, in 2012, almost 40,000 hectares were the total plantings for table grapes. About 34,000 of that were bearing hectares, and then just over 5,000 hectares were non-bearing. Now, that statistic has been changing. I have not gotten the most updated results on that. If you also go to the Table Grape Commission website, you might get a little bit of a different statistic, the same with the USDA. This is the California Department of Food and Agriculture website that gave this statistic. So the United States actually exports more than 50 international markets, and that accounts for about 42% of the total production. That's a lot, and if you actually compare that to some of the other countries out there, that will actually export more than 90% of their total production because they are more reliant on what comes in from international markets. So if we look at table grapes, a lot of the quality parameters are the same as for wine grapes. Total soluble solids is always important, the same with acidity and color. You find that to be important in wine grapes as well. The same with raisins, color maybe not so much. But in terms of table grapes, your berry firmness or crunchiness is very important, the berry size, the flavor, and the color in this case even more so because people like to see berries that's colored completely, especially if it's red or black varieties. They want to see a fully colored grape. And, you know, people like to taste something that tastes good. So if it's a nice flavor or exotic flavor, that's even better. So the legal minimum for your sugar and total soluble solids, according to the USDA, is 16.5 Brix. Now, if you go take a cluster in a vineyard and some of the berries are 16.5 bricks, others might not even be close on that same cluster, or some of them might be higher. You will never find all the berries to be at the same bricks level on a cluster. That's important to know. Especially when you want to harvest earlier, make sure that you don't harvest green berries because that might not be so good for the consumer. Very late ripeness, be sure that you don't have berries that is completely overripe, because that's also maybe a problem when it comes to cold storage potential for the grapes. Now, the earlier you harvest, or how the later you can harvest, if you can get out of that mid-season effect where people have all the grapes on the market, if you have an earlier variety or later variety, especially if it's a nice exotic one, you can get higher prices. That's why people try to push the grapes to be ripe earlier. So that's where potassium actually comes into play here. Now, potassium is required in large quantities in fertilizers. You will always find it in any fertilizer that people put down on the ground or through an irrigation system. And it's also the most abundant mineral in grapes. It's about 3% of the fresh weight. Now, potassium has the ability to increase your sugar, your starch, and your color accumulation. It also builds cellulose, and it can prevent diseases. Now, the effect of potassium on berry firmness was not really known before these projects actually started off. I've got some results that show some differences in firmness later on, and I will explain what happened there. So if we look at the a little bit of the history here, in 1968, foliar potassium applications were reported to increase total soluble solids. So that's a long time ago. And then studies done on Maskmelon in 2009, specifically for metallocyte potassium, showed a significant increase in total soluble solids. But in 2009, not a whole lot of work was done on table grapes. And this study done on Maskmelon was also specifically for foliar applications, not for potassium in the soil or through fertilizer in the soil. So if we look at the role for that, more in the physiological aspects, berry cells actually accumulate solutes, and that maintains a water potential gradient so that the cell expansion process can be maintained. And potassium significantly contributes as an osmotic component, especially under low sugar accumulation conditions, because it's got a very high concentration, it's soluble, and it's very mobile. So the role of potassium in translocation of solutes is usually related to its role in phloem loading and unloading. If we have a potassium deficiency, it can cause great reductions in xylem sap flow, and it can also suppress sugar transport into the phloem, from the leaves into the phloem. That can be a problem. Now, usually deficiencies get corrected by applying fertilizers. So what we did with this study, the USDA in Pollier, they're just located a little south of Fresno. It was Dr. David Smolenik's lab. He just retired recently. They started to test different potassium salts and also focused a lot on metallocyte potassium in 2010 on table grapes. So in 2013, two graduate students came on board, actually in 2012 already, from Fresno State, and they confirmed some of the results that were done in 2010 by the USDA. I do not have all the results here. It will take forever to show you all of it, so I just pulled out some very specific ones. The vineyards that we worked in were located at Fresno State on campus. We have about 110 acres of vineyards there that's in production. The cultivars that we used were Sweet Scarlet, Scarlet Royal, and Autumn Royal. In some cases here, I'm not always showing you the Autumn Royal data because it was two different studies. There's some of the color data on this that I will show you. So the treatments that were involved was water as a control, potassium bicarbonate, metallocyte potassium, potassium sorbate, potassium phosphate, and potassium phosphite. So if you look at the picture on the left over there, this is Sweet Scarlet. That grape is absolutely great to eat. It's got a really good flavor. It's a mid-season red seedless variety, also developed by the USDA. Dr. David Ramming, who also recently retired, he was the breeder for all of these varieties from the USDA. On the right, you have Scarlet Royal grapes. They're a little later mid-season. They're also red, seedless, and good to eat. Later on, I'll show you a picture of Autumn Royal. So the study was a randomized complete block design with 5 blocks and 10 replicates. 2 application dates were used. We beginning of a raison, we had an application of potassium, and 3 weeks later. So there is a specific dates for 2013. The parameters that we measured were total soluble solids and potassium on a weekly basis. The students were out there constantly in the vineyard. They almost were sleeping there. They were out there all the time. And then at harvest, we took total soluble solids, titratable acidity, potassium content, also berry color, berry firmness, berry weight, and berry size. So there's a lot more components involved in the end. So these are the pictures from way back then. Dr. Smilnik on the one top left, spraying directly onto the clusters, and then my students down on the bottom picture where they were actually dipping the clusters in a solution. They found that that worked a little better, but you can believe that that's quite labor-intensive to do this. You can't do an 80-acre vineyard by dipping it. So directly, but the direct application is what actually worked. So just a little results here. Sweet scarlet, total soluble solids. If you look at the graph over here, the potassium bicarbonate, the metallosate, as well as the sorbate over here, were accumulating quicker in terms of sugar. You see the different application dates here, also dates when they took some samples, and that is for sweet scarlet. If we look at scarlet royal, we had pretty much the same effect, except that potassium phosphate were also in play here on the higher sugar level. All right, so here if we look at the two varieties more in a graph form, when we did the statistical analysis for this, a very big or a very significant difference here on both, that the potassium bicarbonate, sorbate, and metallosate all had a significant higher sugar accumulation. Firmness, this is where things get interesting. As I mentioned before this study, we didn't know a lot about firmness for potassium. In this case, if we look at the firmness, it was lower, statistically lower for both these varieties. Now, if you look at it like this, it's significant, but when you have people eating these grapes, it's not so significant. People don't pick up on that type of firmness. But what I don't know, and my question is, what does this do for post-harvest storage quality? I don't know. We might have to look into that. This is just a very big table with a lot of data on it. These are some of the data that I showed you. And here, this is actually the color measurements that we're dealing with here in terms of the lightness, the chroma, and the hue. If we look at this in terms of autumn royal here in the bottom, sweet scarlet, here's some of the measurements that we took. These grapes were harvested on the same day, but they have significant color differences. Now, how we took the color measurements, it is a handheld spectrophotometer. It's a Konica Minolta that we used in this case, and it gives you a very significant difference. So discussion-wise, what we in the end got from all of this results, or these results, is that we accelerated the maturity of the grapes for autumn royal by about 18 days. Now, people will say that puts you right in the middle of mid-season, but since autumn royal is a black seedless grape, it's a very popular one for people to eat, so they still like it. I don't think there's a whole lot of black seedless grapes mid-season, to be honest. There's a lot of Thompsons out there and a lot of other white grapes. Scarlet royal, we had a 12-day acceleration, and sweet scarlet, 11 days, which is quite significant. So conclusions, this is pretty much what my students came up with, is that your best potassium sources are potassium sorbate, potassium bicarbonate, and metallosate potassium. Little or no response from potassium phosphate and potassium phosphite. And then cluster-directed applications of these three potassium sources can actually facilitate earlier harvest and also mature a larger crop on the vines. There is also, I know, some studies going on potassium at the moment to look into these a little further. I know if you have any questions on that, I might be able to direct you to certain people who's working on those. just to say thank you to Dr. Joseph Malenik and his team. I know Dr. David Oberland is in the audience today. He's also at the USDA, and he works on this as well. And the two students that just graduated their master degrees from Fresno State. Thank you. Any questions? We have maybe time for one. Yes, in the back. The rate, oh goodness, I can't remember the rate. I will actually have to go look back on that for you. It was the same rate regardless of that. And even... Okay, thank you. Yes, but it was the same throughout all the sources, yes. Okay, if there's any questions, I see my time is up. I have to introduce the next speaker, but I'm around if you need to ask me some more questions.